Next matter on for oral argument this morning is in the matter of TM and the commissioner and Commissioner Harpstead. Council, as you're getting squared away, I'll just remind you of our rules. Each of you will have 15 minutes to present your arguments with 5 additional minutes to appellant's counsel for rebuttal. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument for the benefit of the public as we keep track of the recordings. We make an audio recording only of the proceedings. And there's a button right in front of the lectern that allows you to raise or lower it to match your height for your convenience. Counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready to proceed, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Benjamin Weiss of Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services, representing the appellant identified here as TM. So, why are we arguing about an eviction from a homeless shelter for a family that obtained housing a year ago? It's because Ramsey County's contracted shelters are evicting families without following the procedures that shelters statewide are mandated to follow under federal law. The State Department of Human Services is refusing explicitly in this instance to address these procedural violations through its appeal process. And what our firm has learned is that because of the short-term and fluid nature of family homelessness, reviewing these issues under an exception to mootness is, as a practical matter, the only way they're ever going to get reviewed by an actual judicial branch court.
And what is your strongest argument in terms of the mootness exceptions?
Well, we've made 2, Your Honor, and I think that they're both strong. We think that the 4 issues that we're asking the district court to address are really classic examples of capable of repetition but evading review. In 3 of the cases, they are also functionally justiciable questions of statewide significance.
But questions of repetition regard the actual parties, right? I mean, it's not just repetition by others. And in order for there to be something more than speculation about whether or not these parties would be back with the same issues, again, you'd have to assume losing housing. You have to assume that they're going to go here for housing. I mean, there may be limited state resources, but there are myriad other resources that might satisfy housing. There may not be in this situation again where there isn't a termination or discharge under these without following the rules for discharge.
Yeah, well, Your Honor, I think what would have to happen here. I mean, first of all, we're talking about not the reasonable likelihood of being discharged for the same reason again, but of being discharged from Project Home for any reason. So,
you have to show that they'd be back at Project Home.
Right. So looking at the record, this family has already had at least 3 episodes of homelessness that included stays at Project Home. Project Home is one of 2 contracted shelters for homeless families in Ramsey County.
Is there an age limit for children? I mean, it seems like the son has already turned 18, and the daughter, who was involved in the altercation that led to them being evicted, is 17 or close?
Yeah, the daughter's date of birth is in the record, Your Honor. She'll be 17 at the end of March.
But I'm saying, does Project Home take families where the children are no longer are emancipated?
They will take families with children that are 18 at the date of entry if they are still in high school. And I think in some instances they may actually go higher if there's special education. But that's not specifically in the record. What the policy in the record says is that 18 or under or 18 and still in high school is the definition of a minor child. So the housing that the appellant found is in Ramsey County. And so if this appellant does lose her housing, then Project Home is going to be one of the 2 options that are available for shelter. And just during the course of this case, this appellant was rather systematically evicted from multiple shelter options in Ramsey County for different alleged rule violations. So once she's back in this situation, looking at this specific appellant, it's unfortunately, there is a reasonable likelihood of this circumstance recurring, and I think probably at least as reasonable as the appellant in Bliley again being subjected to an involuntary hold with neuroleptic medication, or the appellant in Brooks again being subject to pretrial bail. So the The second element of the capable of repetition test is whether the duration of the event is too short to be fully litigated. And again, family homelessness is by nature short-term and fluid. When you're dealing with a single adult homeless population, you will sometimes run into people who have been living in encampments for years on end. You don't find that with families. Families are motivated to find housing for the sake of the kids, and they also don't want trouble with child protection. It's not uncommon for families to cycle in and out of homelessness repeatedly, as the family in this case did here. But individual spells of homelessness typically last for a few months, and we had some statistics in the record from the Humphrey Institute. The average stay at Project Home as of 2019 was 61 days. The longest reported stay was 226 days. And out of the shelter evictions that my firm has handled, and by my count there have been 44, only two of those have actually had a client who stayed homeless long enough for the case to even reach district court, let alone this court. And I do want to say in response to respondents' brief that the county attorney's office was involved in each and every one of those 44 cases, and they're well aware of the numbers. So in practice, families stay homeless long enough to go through the DHS appeal process, but as shown by the record here, that's not an adequate remedy for these particular procedural violations, and judicial review is, we're at a place where judicial review is needed. The second exception that we believe applies here is the functionally justiciable issues of statewide significance with respect to three of the four things that we're asking to have reviewed. And
that's the part where I'm troubled, the statewide significance. So the three things, well, the four issues that were raised, as I understand your argument, well, those were passed over. There wasn't actually a decision on those things.
That's correct.
It seems to distinguish this case from the cases where the Supreme Court has applied the exception, the functional justiciability exception. You've got Rudd, where you've got the moment of mootness occurs after this court made a decision, and so you've got a statewide decision deciding an issue of law, and then it sort of stuck, and the Supreme Court says, we're going to take this one up. Statewide significance is obvious because you've got a court with statewide jurisdiction deciding the issues on the merits. In Jasper, the same thing. And there you've got the issue of whether there was a proper rulemaking procedure for a particular piece of equipment that was used across the state for all DWIs. So statewide significance is obvious there. And in Matthews, you've got jury instructions, same thing, whether or not, you know, the effect of unadjudicated jury verdicts. In this case, you've got Ramsey County doing something. There's no indication in the record that this is widespread throughout other recipients of DHS funds. And you've got a decision that doesn't get to the merits that you want us to say these issues that you want to raise are of statewide significance. So if what happened in the administrative proceeding is, well, we don't have to look at this because the juvenile was not, she didn't have a disability, so we don't have to get to these other issues. But that was a right or wrong analysis. There was never a decision by the district court or by any tribunal that has given any sort of precedent, as the district court put it, across the state. Can you address that issue?
Yeah, well, Your Honor, and that's what we're asking for, is we're asking for a remand to the district court to address these issues. And one of the issues is the one that you alluded to, and that is, you know, can DHS appeals, under its governing statutes, refuse to address a reasonable accommodation issue that an appellant has raised as a basis for contesting an agency decision? That's by nature a statewide issue. If they can refuse to review one issue, it's unclear what they can't refuse to address. And where that leaves us is essentially that, you know, if it's essentially a circular argument. If DHS says, well, we're not going to address this, and then this court says, well, we're not going to remand because DHS chose not to address it.
Well, when did appellant first raise these issues? Were they raised in the initial appeal or on the reconsideration request? And does it make a difference?
So the issues of the procedures that DHS was required to follow, that the shelter was required to follow. So the examination of the extenuating circumstances, the notification of ADA, the internal grievance procedure, those were all raised in the initial hearing. And then the issue of, and then as was the request for a reasonable accommodation. And then at the in the reconsideration decision that DHS made the ruling, we're not going to address the reasonable accommodation issue. So that arose for the first time at that level. And so we asked we appealed all of those issues to the district court. My client found housing, and then we asked that these four procedural issues that were not dependent on the facts of the case be reviewed under the exceptions to mootness. And then the court refused that, and that's why we're here.
I have a question, just a quick one, procedurally. So statewide significance here, I understand what you're saying. They're not following the rules that they need to federal law. We want to hold them accountable, and we want them to change the way they do things. So that's important to everybody in the state. But that seems, it's bigger than two parties or the parties in this case. Is there not another way to get that issue before the court? Could it be a deck action? Could it be some sort of writ? I mean, are there other ways? Is this the only way that issue gets to the court?
As far as I can tell, Your Honor, yes. We have, there isn't a private right of action under the HUD regulations, as far as we can tell, so we wouldn't be able to bring a Section 1983 action. I don't think there would be a basis for a declaratory judgment because, again, there would have to be some sort of an underlying private right of action. Where the private right of action comes from is the DHS appeal statute 256.0451 subdivision 16, which says that as a basis for contesting an agency action, we can raise any issue under either state or federal law. And then judicial review is authorized by that statute. So to the extent we can determine, this is the only route that we've found to raise these issues.
Unlike the other cases that I mentioned, where the issue of mootness came up as the case got to the decision-making tribunal that ruled on the merits, in these cases that I'm mentioning, the Supreme Court. In this case, the question of mootness came up before it gets to us. So if we were to agree with you, wouldn't the remedy be to remand it to the district court rather than for us to decide the question?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and I'm sorry if I wasn't clear on that. That is exactly what we're requesting. We're asking for a remand to the district court to make a decision on the four issues that we've identified. And then we also asked for instructions in terms of the standard of review. But Your Honor, we're not asking this court to decide the merits of those four issues. I
mean, the part that I'm still stuck with, and you may convince me otherwise, but that really the issue that is of statewide significance is only the review process, the appeal process, not the merits of the four things that you brought up. Because there was no... Your argument is there was no sufficient review of those things. And so that's the only thing of statewide significance, not I'm kind of having a nested doll
Your Honor,
problem
with the... If I can try to answer with respect to the other issues. ESG funding is distributed to shelters statewide through the state DHS Office of Economic Opportunity and through local governments. And so we are asking for a review of what the federal requirement to examine all extenuating circumstances means and what do shelters need to do to inform residents of their right to request a reasonable accommodation for a disability. And we believe that the importance of these issues, and these are both purely legal questions, they apply to shelters statewide. If this dismissal is affirmed, and if this case is found to be essentially unreviewable because it became moot at some point during the process, what that tells shelters statewide receiving this funding is You don't have to follow these rules because nobody's enforcing them. DHS is not enforcing the rules, and the courts are not enforcing the rules.
That's the part that I'm stuck with, the statewide significance. If it would feel different to me if you had a statewide, if it wasn't just Ramsey County, if there was some state agency that was failing in its procedures, allegedly failing in its procedures.
Yeah, well, and Your
it's
Honor,
it's just Ramsey County, so I'm having a hard time seeing the statewide significance there. Disabuse me of my
hesitation. Yeah, well, and Your Honor, I think the comparison here is to the Schmaltz case. You know, that involved an 85-year-old woman in Renville County who had a fairly unusual legal issue. It had to do with whether her husband's non-residential life estates counted as a resource for, against the medical assistance long-term care asset limit for her. And so the case went, I think it also did go through the DHS appeal process, and I see that I'm at time, but I'll finish my answer if
Please.
That's okay.
Yes, you may.
And then at some point during the course of the litigation, the appellant passed away. And the Supreme Court said that because this affects estate planning statewide and because this affects the medical assistance program statewide, even though it arose from this, you know, one situation out of Renville County, we believe this is an issue of statewide significance that needs to be addressed. And I'll save whatever else you've got for rebuttal.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes to do so. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Counsel, may please the court. I am Assistant Ramsey County Attorney Jean Park, representing respondent Ramsey County Health and Wellness in this appeal. The parties are in agreement that the underlying action before the district court is moot, and the question now is whether the district court correctly decided that the narrow exceptions to the mootness doctrine did not apply in this case. It is the contention and position of respondents that appellant's particular case and matter does not fit the narrow exceptions, either as a matter that is likely to recur, but would also continue to evade judicial review, a matter that is functionally justiciable and presents an important question of statewide significance.
You agree that there were issues that were raised that weren't decided the procedural issues that weren't decided in the administrative process.
Correct, Your Honor. I agree that it's really unclear that the issues that appellant's counsel raised in its request for reconsideration were actually fully raised or discussed at the initial appeal.
And what difference does that make?
That goes to the whole issue of whether there's a functionally justiciable matter.
On reconsideration. They were briefed. They were addressed by the judge.
They were addressed. There were legal arguments that were made based on a fact record that had not been developed as to the issues of disability, as to the issue of whether an accommodation was requested, an accommodation can be requested after misconduct has already happened. I mean, these were, and then I think one of the questions is whether Project Home had an affirmative obligation to look into all extenuating circumstances, which kind of adds language to the actual statute.
And basically, as I understand it, the Human Services judge just said, no, I'm not going there. I'm not going to address these issues.
Yes, and further said that the record supported the eviction decision as it was. The extenuating circumstances that counsel brought up did not change the fact and the factual and legal record that the judge found substantiated the decision to evict the appellant and her children. They need not. So the question before the DHS was, did Project Home have grounds under the applicable statutes to evict appellant and her two children, as they did in May on May 24th of 2022.
Right, but the legal argument, I think, is, if I understand it right, is that there are procedural limits on the eviction process that weren't followed, and those are arguments that were raised and that should have been addressed in the context of the actual decision.
I am not sure that the procedural, it's unclear from the record that those procedural questions that appellant's counsel posed on reconsideration were brought before the HSJ.
So the import of that is we don't know whether there's a matter of statewide. The matter of statewide significance would be that these are things are being ignored by DHS, but there's a unique reason for ignoring them in this case.
Correct, Your Honor. The one issue that was clearly brought before the DHS was the issue before specifically HSJ Hall was the issue of the ADA and accommodation, which was disregarded and expressly so.
But didn't the Human Services judge said that's we don't have the authority to do anything about
right.
it? Enforcing the ADA is for somebody else.
Correct.
So I guess my underlying question is the decision by the Human Services judge not to address these legal issues, does that somehow preclude us from determining that they were functionally justiciable issues?
I don't believe that there is a sufficient record in the underlying. Well, let me ask a point of clarification, Your Honor. So is Your Honor asking whether this court can determine whether it was proper for DHS to disregard the ADA argument?
No, I'm saying, are you taking the position that that because the Human Services judge did not decide those legal procedural issues under the ADA or otherwise, that the appellant cannot make his or make her show her burden of showing that the issues are functionally justiciable?
Correct, Your Honor, because in the underlying hearing, the fact determination was that the appellant's daughter was not disabled. So it stands to reason that there would not be a further examination of whether an accommodation was required when the factual findings were such that that there was not adequate demonstration that the appellant's daughter suffered from a disability that precluded her from functioning in any major daily life activity, which is the standard for an ADA claim.
But that's only one of the claims that were raised. So I mean, there's
Correct.
A number of procedural challenges. So what about the others?
Those
you're
other procedures.
You're saying there's just not enough of a record?
Correct, Your Honor.
To jump in. If the Human Services judge says these things are beyond what I'm authorized to do, so I'm not going to consider these broader procedural challenges, somebody else has to do that. And then there's an attempt to get that issue before the district court, and the district court says, well, I'm not going to do that because it's moot. I mean, wouldn't the record regarding the procedural issues have had to been developed in the district court if the Human Services judge didn't have the authority to decide these issues? So, I mean, if the complaint is we don't have the factual record, we need to determine whether or not the mootness exception applies, isn't the remedy to remand it to the district court, saying you need to have a hearing, mm-hmm. more fully litigate the possibility of these exceptions, and determine whether or not they apply?
That's a very good question, Your Honor. I believe... I don't want to speak out of turn, but I do believe that there was another mechanism appellant could have followed to have these questions presented, not in an appeal, which of an agency decision upholding an eviction determination.
Well, that's on the first possible exception, evading review. That it's repetitious and evading review, but
sure.
That's not a factor on the functional justiciability issue, is it?
No, it's an evading review, correct, Your Honor. So that does go to the, but it also, it's they dovetail, Your Honor, because if there's not a record, if the record was not fully developed, to your point, during appellant's presentation, Sorry, I feel I'm being pulled in two different directions
Sorry.
Here.
Go ahead and finish. I thought you were finished answering Judge Larkin's question. Go ahead and finish answering Judge Larkin's question.
It just seems so circular. I mean,
it does,
you're
Your
saying,
Honor.
Well, it was correctly determined to be moot because we don't have a record that would have shown an exception applies, but there wasn't an opportunity to develop a record to show that the exception applies because the court said this is moot. That's what concerns me about your argument that we shouldn't remand this for determination whether or not a mootness exception applies because an adequate record wasn't developed the first time around.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that there was nothing that foreclosed appellant from establishing that record at the hearing before Hall. There were no evidentiary rulings precluding the arguments and presenting points of law and also witnesses to present those procedural claims.
But why would, if the district court was of the mind that the matter was moot and no exception applies, I'm having a hard time understanding why the district court would have allowed appellant to have an evidentiary hearing on the procedural questions he wants to challenge.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not understanding your question.
Okay, maybe I'm not tracking this. You're saying it's not functionally, the issues regarding the procedures which appellant wants to challenge are not functionally justiciable because we don't have a record that would allow the court to decide the issues. My question is, how could appellant develop a record that would make the issue of the alleged procedural shortcomings functionally justiciable unless the district court allowed him to do so? And why would the district court allow him to do so if the district court had already concluded that the exceptions don't apply?
Okay, then my answer to that, now thank you for the clarification. It was not for the district court to allow for the issue, to allow for appellant to present evidence rendering a moot action functionally justiciable. What I'm saying is that appellant could have presented these issues and developed a record before the agency and failed to do so, thus leaving the district court at a complete loss because the district court does not have a record from which to render a determination on these procedural questions, which were not fully adduced before the administrative agency.
And then just to stop you there, and they weren't fully adduced before the administrative agency because the hearing officer said, I'm not going to address these things. I'm not going to address these alleged procedural shortcomings.
In the determination, but the record itself had evidence been put on, testimony been given, there would be a record from which a district court on
my
review.
My question is, as somebody who's been on the bench close to 20 years, why would the hearing officer allow the time and resources to be devoted to a hearing to develop a factual record about functional justiciability when the hearing officer was saying, that's not my wheelhouse, I can't make that determination?
Your Honor, the HSJ allowed, for example, the issue of the ADA, alleged ADA violation, to be presented fully with testimony and made a determination. What I'm saying is the factual record relating to these procedural questions was not developed by appellant.
Are you essentially saying, I just want to try to understand your argument, that in the administrative process, these issues weren't fully developed enough for a decision to be made, and therefore deciding that their statewide significance would be inappropriate because the decision not to address these issues was based upon an insufficient record and an insufficient argument, not the carte blanche, we're not going to address matters of procedure.
Correct, Your Honor.
All right, then I'm looking at the appellant's request for reconsideration that lays out the legal arguments. Do you maintain, or is there some law that says that was too late, that somehow those arguments aren't properly made because they weren't briefed before the reconsideration request?
No, Your Honor. Under the statute that appellant's counsel has repeatedly cited to on reconsideration, it was perfectly acceptable for the appellant to raise any and all arguments, but there's no fact record supporting the legal arguments.
Other than the testimony at the preceding hearing and then the references to it in the reconsideration
Correct, Your Honor.
Request itself.
Was lacking, just so I'm clear, what facts do you think would have been necessary to ripen the three issues that weren't addressed? What was missing? The question is, why couldn't the administrative law judge decide those issues based upon what was before the agency at that time?
Well, the administrative law judge exercised his discretion not to decide those issues on the grounds that all the evidence that formed the record was sufficient to sustain the eviction determination under Project Home's zero tolerance safety policy.
There's nothing that requires the question. What facts are missing to make this functionally justiciable as a matter of statewide importance? What do we need? Aren't these just legal issues that need to be reviewed and determined de novo?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. So if we look at, I think we're running a little bit. We're conflating two different issues. So there's the standard of functional justiciability and an important question of statewide significance. That's a conjunctive. Those are two different issues.
Well, one is a subset of the other. Statewide importance is necessary.
Sure. It can be functionally justiciable. So let's say it's functionally justiciable. Is this of statewide significance? And the lower court correctly found that the specific questions to this very narrowly applied exception really concerned Ramsey County.
I think I see what you're saying now. Wholly apart from statewide significance, mm-hmm. you're saying the arguments were, the raw material wasn't there for the functional justiciability. It wasn't developed enough for a decision to be made by the administrative agency at the time it was presented.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. That is my position, and I'm sorry for being so unclear.
No, it's not your fault. I think we were all dancing around looking for what exactly is how these pieces fit together.
Sure.
I believe your time has
my
expired.
My time is
unless
expired.
The panel
thank you, Your Honor.
Any other questions? I think. Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, with regard to the record on these issues, Ms. Park was not at the hearings. I was. There were two hearings over. They were held about a month apart. They were both very long hearings. I believe they were both scheduled for half a day. And I would submit that we completely developed the raw material, the factual predicate necessary to decide these issues. I elicited testimony from Project Home's manager on what specifically she had done and had not done to examine extenuating circumstances before making the decision to evict. I also cross-examined her on whether any attempts had been made to notify my client and other residents of the shelter about their right to request accommodation under the ADA. It was actually in the middle of one of the hearings in my cross-examination of this shelter manager that we learned about the existence of the standards manual that had the internal grievance procedure. That manual was submitted post-hearing, and I submitted an argument by email post-hearing, which is in the record, arguing that that hadn't been complied with. And then, as Judge Bjorkman pointed out, the first two I argued in our initial closing argument. The issue having to do with the standards manual I raised in a post-hearing argument, and then, as Judge Bjorkman pointed out, all of these issues were raised as part of our request for reconsideration.
Am I correct? There was a separate hearing for the reconsideration issue, correct, or no?
No, Your Honor. There isn't a hearing in the reconsideration process. There were two. There was a continuance of the initial evidentiary hearing, so it was held on two dates. Reconsideration is completely done in writing.
Was there any evidence presented that the issues you're raising and the concerns you have are occurring in any county other than Ramsey County?
No, Your Honor. That was not... That's not something that you're really thinking of when you're doing an administrative appeal, is building a record on functional justiciability in case the case should become moot, and I apologize for that.
And so then you'd agree that the hook for statewide significance wouldn't be the Ramsey County procedures, it would be the appeal process, and the review of the of Ramsey County and anyone else's proceedings.
Yeah, it would be the appeal process with respect to that issue. It would also be the fact that ESG is distributed to shelters statewide. There is, as far as I can tell, no law anywhere, no case law anywhere interpreting these regulations and what specifically shelters have to do to comply with them.
But if there's no record that these sort of initial procedural problems, these discharge challenges that you're making occur anywhere outside of Ramsey County, then why would we be dealing with a matter of statewide significance, even if the decision is being made at the state level in the review process?
Because we're dealing with interpretation of a statute that governs funding that's distributed to shelters statewide. And again, if DHS is refusing to look at these issues, and the courts are not going to look at these issues because the cases moot out too quickly, then that's telling shelters statewide, you don't need to follow these rules.
The difficulty is, and when you say, well, DHS is not going to look at these issues, we've got one case where DHS doesn't look at, well, you mean the case itself and the reconsideration?
Your Honor, I did note this in my argument to the district court and in our brief, but this is the second time that we've gotten that particular ruling from the DHS Director of Appeals that we're not going to look at the ADA issues. The first one we didn't appeal because we lost contact with the client.
Also Project Hope, the same Ramsey County?
Actually, I believe that one came
out. Is this on the record, just so we're clear?
It is, Your Honor. I did raise it at the district court.
Okay.
I did. And I did put it in a footnote in the brief. But, I believe that one actually, that case actually came out of the other contracted shelter in Ramsey County.
But Ramsey County is the county.
Yeah, it was also Ramsey County. So in summary, Ramsey County is evicting homeless families with children from shelter of last resort year after year in violation of federally mandated procedures. We and respondents have been involved in more than 40 appeals of these cases. DHS is actively refusing to address these procedural issues, and we haven't found any other method of addressing them besides going up through the DHS process. We're at a point where judicial review is needed, but because family homelessness is short-term and fluid, these cases continue to evade review. We believe that all four issues are capable of repetition, but evading review, we've explained why there's a reasonable likelihood that, of my client unfortunately being in the same position again. We believe that all are functionally justiciable and in need of immediate resolution. Three out of four of them apply to shelters statewide. We're asking this court to remand with instructions to conduct a de novo review of the four legal issues that we've identified. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. Interesting issue. The matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you.